Picture this scenario for a second. You log onto an app, and someone you have literally never met offers $5,000 to anyone willing to permanently tattoo a digital logo onto their forehead.
Right, which, you know, a few years ago is just a bizarre internet prank.
Exactly. It's a prank that just fizzles out in a forum somewhere. But today, three different people immediately did it. They uploaded the video proof, and an automated system instantly deposited the funds right into their accounts.
No banks, no managers.
None. No corporate oversight, no delays, no paperwork. Just a digital prompt that instantly triggered a permanent physical action in the real world.
Which fundamentally changes our understanding of friction. I mean, we are moving from a web where digital actions just kind of stay on the screen to a web where digital incentives instantly alter physical reality.
And that collapse, that absolute disintegration of the boundary between the digital and physical world, is exactly what we are tearing into today. So, welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
It is Tuesday, August 4th, 2026, and we are unpacking a really massive stack of notes from the Good Evening Gamers newsletter. And our mission today for you listening is to really understand how and why the rigid walls that have defined the gaming industry and, well, the broader digital economy for decades are just completely crumbling right in front of us.
Yeah, it's a huge night for news.
It totally is. We are talking about legendary PlayStation exclusives suddenly jumping to competing consoles, a studio famous for essentially just one franchise finally breaking its own mold, and, like that forehead tattoo, the wild west of decentralized crypto bleeding directly into your physical neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's unpack this because, honestly, I am vibrating with enthusiasm right now.
Exciting.
But also, I've got a healthy dose of confusion at how fast this landscape is mutating.
Well, it is mutating, but there's a really clear underlying logic to it. You know, what we are witnessing tonight isn't just a list of unrelated announcements. It's actually a massive coordinated survival strategy.
Survival strategy.
Exactly. Digital entertainment and decentralized platforms are desperately adapting to an ecosystem where the old rules, specifically this reliance on closed ecosystems and walled gardens, they just simply do not work anymore.
Okay, let's start with the most sacred walled garden in gaming, which is the console war. Specifically, the death of platform exclusivity. Because there is no better example of this than the shockwave from the Summer Game Fest.
Oh, absolutely. The Final Fantasy announcement?
Right. So the third and final Final Fantasy VII Remake chapter, FF7 Revelation, is officially launching in spring 2027. It concludes this massive seven-year journey. And the director, Naoki Hamaguchi, is calling it a, quote, reimagining.
Which is putting it lightly based on that trailer.
Seriously. I mean, the trailer hinted at major timeline changes. We literally saw Aerith appearing in a scene after the events of the Forgotten City, which is mind-blowing. But the actual industry-shaking detail isn't the lore.
No, it's the platforms.
It's the platforms. It is launching simultaneously on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, the Switch 2, and PC. Day one.
Which, historically, is completely unprecedented. I mean, Final Fantasy VII practically built the PlayStation brand back in the day. But the exclusivity model has really reached the breaking point. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it just comes down to sheer brutal mathematics.
How so?
Well, Square Enix and Sony have looked at the spreadsheets. The development budgets for modern AAA games have ballooned so massively. We are talking hundreds of millions of dollars in asset creation, motion capture, huge marketing campaigns, that a single platform release simply cannot generate the volume of sales required to cover those costs.
Let alone actually provide a profit margin that shareholders are demanding.
Right, exactly. The franchise must go global across all hardware to survive.
Okay, but I have to push back on that logic for a second. It's like finding out McDonald's is suddenly selling Big Macs at Burger King. But does this mean buying a specific console is becoming totally pointless for you as a gamer? Because if the math dictates that you absolutely must go multi-platform, how does Nintendo get away with keeping Zelda and Mario entirely exclusive?
That's a great point.
I mean, they hoard their IP and print money. Why does the math apply to Sony, but not Nintendo?
Because Nintendo operates on a fundamentally different economic model. Nintendo actually makes a profit on their hardware from day one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, their consoles use older, highly optimized, much less expensive components. They don't sell the Switch at a loss. Sony and Microsoft, however, traditionally sell their cutting-edge hardware at a massive loss.
Hoping to make up the difference on software sales.
Precisely. By taking a 30% cut within their closed ecosystem. But when a single game costs $300 million to make, the loss leader console model collapses. The install base of just one console isn't large enough anymore to buy enough copies to offset both the hardware loss and the massive software budget.
That makes total sense. So Final Fantasy has to cast the widest net possible, and Sony is clearly reading from that exact same spreadsheet for their own in-house studios.
Definitely. Look at Ghost of Yutei.
Yes. This is the 1603 Japan set successor to Ghost of Tsushima. It drops September 15th, 2026, and they are putting it on PC on day one. They aren't making PC players wait 2 years anymore.
And they are aggressively investing in the infrastructure to make that transition seamless. I mean, they explicitly hired Nixxis Software, a studio whose entire expertise is PC optimization, just to avoid the catastrophic, buggy PC launches we saw with early ports.
The Last of Us Part 1, which was a mess.
Exactly.
And the tech specs they released for Yutei show they are not holding back at all. They built this from the ground up. The PC specs feature things like DLSS 3.5, FSR 3.1, completely uncapped frame rates, and up to 32:9 ultra-wide support.
Which is where the technological boundary between console and PC truly dissolves.
It totally does. So the wall between the console loyalist and the PC gamer is gone. But this transition requires massive technical agility from the studios. Which brings us to our second theme, because it's not just platforms breaking out of their historical constraints.
Studios are doing it too.
Yeah, development studios are desperately trying to escape their own molds. And here is where it gets really interesting. Game Freak, the studio literally synonymous with Pokemon, just launched a brand new, totally non-Pokemon title called Beast of Reincarnation.
It's a phenomenal pivot.
Aesthetically, it's wild. It's set in 4026 AD, so 2,000 years post-collapse. You play as Emma, who is this sealer with blight powers, and her nanotech organic dog, Ku, and you're hunting these things called Nushi.
And the art direction is fantastic.
Right. It's this ukiyo-e traditional Japanese woodblock style meeting cyberpunk, designed by Pablo Uchida, plus Yasunori Mitsuda doing the music. But honestly, I want to talk about the combat. Polygon just gave it an 8.5 out of 10, based almost entirely on how this plays.
The combat system is easily the most significant indicator of Game Freak's overall strategy here. It's a really unique hybrid system.
Yeah, so it's real-time action for regular mobs, and then deep turn-based strategy for boss encounters, which I have an analogy for this.
Here.
It's like the Rolling Stones suddenly dropping a flawless experimental jazz album. It's so outside their wheelhouse. But my question to you is this hybrid combat system genuinely brilliant game design? Or is it just Game Freak hedging their bets so they don't totally alienate their massive base of turn-based Pokemon fans?
It's definitely a calculated risk to capture both demographics, but I'd argue it's a very necessary one. You have to look at the graveyard of studios that tried to abandon their core competency entirely.
Oh, like BioWare with Anthem.
Exactly. When BioWare, a studio revered for slow, narrative-driven RPGs, pivoted to create a fast-paced multiplayer shooter, it was a catastrophe. They alienated their core fans and failed to build a system robust enough for the shooter audience.
So Game Freak is trying to avoid the Anthem trap.
Right. By utilizing this hybrid system, they're capturing the modern sort of Souls-like action audience for traversal while keeping the traditional JRPG fans happy with high-stakes, deliberate, turn-based boss fights. Tekken Analysis predicts modest sales, maybe 2 to 3 million in the first year.
Which isn't Pokemon numbers.
No, but financially it's a huge success because it proves the studio has the architectural capability to build a modern engine entirely outside of their one huge franchise.
So they prove they can build a new engine. Meanwhile, Nintendo is proving that sometimes the best way to sell your brand new future hardware is to just aggressively leverage the engine of the past.
They really are the masters of weaponizing nostalgia.
They absolutely are. So a full remake of Zelda. Ocarina of Time is officially confirmed for the Switch 2, rumored to be running on Unreal Engine 5.
Which is huge.
We got this 45-second trailer, Young Link, the Master Sword, Ganondorf's voice echoing out, and this tagline, Reborn for a New Generation.
The internet went wild for it.
Totally lost its mind. But here's the thing. This entire project leaked heavily prior to the Nintendo Direct. And Nintendo notoriously hates leaks because they feel it ruins the magic of the reveal. So the internet's still exploding over this 45-second clip despite the leaks. I have to ask, are leaks actually just a form of free, completely unstoppable marketing at this point?
Well, the industry is fiercely divided on that. For a brand new IP, a leak can genuinely derail a campaign. But Zelda is an anomaly. The Zelda IP is absolutely bulletproof.
Right.
So a leak functions more as a pressure cooker, building anticipation. But honestly, the leak isn't Nintendo's biggest problem here.
What is?
It's the psychological weight of balancing expectations. You have this 1998 classic that sits at a 99 on Metacritic. It practically wrote the textbook on 3D game design. Nintendo is navigating a terrifying tension between preserving that immense magic and meeting modern expectations.
Especially with new controls and quality of life features.
Exactly. Modern players do not have the patience for the obscure puzzle logic of 1998. But if you smooth out too much of that friction, the game feels too easy. Plus, they have to justify a potential $70 price tag for an experience many players already know by heart.
Well, they are at least removing friction on the hardware side. Alongside the Zelda announcement, Nintendo just released the Joy-Con 2 controllers.
Yeah.
They are this bright blue and yellow matching the summer themes and those Mario Odyssey 2 rumors.
The specs on those are quite impressive.
Yeah, a 35-hour battery life. But the crucial part is the completely redesigned anti-drift mechanism. So your character won't slowly walk off a cliff when you put the controller down.
Which is essential. You cannot maintain a player's immersion if they are constantly fighting the physical hardware in their hands.
Exactly. So we've talked about the crumbling boundaries in gaming consoles, sharing libraries, studios breaking genre molds, looking backward to move forward. But if you want to talk about radical boundary breaking, the most insane thing happening tonight is in the digital economy.
Yes. The crypto bounties.
Right, where digital tokens are literally causing real-world physical actions.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Pump.Fun.
This is a fascinating collision of decentralized tech and physical reality.
So for context, Pump.Fun is a Solana meme coin platform. It currently accounts for about 43.6% of all Solana DEX volume, pulling in over $9 million a week. And they just launched a feature called Go Marketplace. The slogan is literally, pay anyone to do anything.
It's a totally decentralized bounty board.
Yeah. And the Solana tech actually enables this, right?
Yes, and it's vital to understand why. Solana operates with what's called 150 millisecond finality.
So less than a blink of an eye.
Exactly. And the transaction fees are sub 0.1 cent. You couldn't do this efficiently on older blockchains because the friction of the network fees would kill the utility. But Solana's architecture completely removes that friction.
And because that friction is gone, human behavior is just running wild. The bounties on this marketplace range from normal services like paying for graphic design to extreme physical acts.
Base jumping, eating incredibly spicy food.
And the forehead tattoo. A $5,000 payout for a literal forehead logo tattoo. So we need to report on the ethics of this entirely neutrally because the arguments on both sides are fierce.
Very fierce.
On one side, you have the massive ethical concerns. Critics are pointing out that this encourages dangerous, potentially illegal acts. It promotes physical harm. And because it's crypto, there are fears about untraceable payments funding illicit activities.
Right. But then you have Pump.Fun's defense. They point directly to their terms of service, which explicitly prohibit illegal or NSFW content. They argue that users assume their own physical risk, just as they would in any peer-to-peer interaction.
Right, the truth or dare defense.
Exactly. But their primary defense is the technology itself. Because it's on Solana, every single payment is permanently recorded on a public blockchain. They argue it's actually highly traceable, making it a terrible place for actual crime.
Right. So we have Gray Market acting like this decentralized digital truth or dare board with zero friction. But to perfectly contrast this decentralized freedom, let's look at Telegram tonight.
A very different situation.
Completely different. Telegram, an app that prides itself on privacy, was briefly removed from Apple's App Store for violating CSAM, or child sexual abuse material, policies. And what's wild is that Telegram complied instantly.
They blocked the users, removed the content, and boosted their moderation immediately.
And they were restored to the App Store in under 24 hours. So what does this all mean? We have Pump.Fun running wild, while Telegram's situation proves that no matter how big you are, Apple is still the ultimate bouncer at the club.
It really raises an important question, and it synthesizes the core tension of the modern internet. Decentralized platforms like Pump.Fun boast total, absolute freedom, but they are on a direct collision course with real-world regulators and centralized ecosystems like Apple's App Store.
Because eventually, you need an app.
Right. Centralized platforms hold the ultimate power of distribution. You can be as decentralized as you want, but if Apple won't put you on the iPhone, your reach is severely capped.
It's the walled gardens of Web 2 fighting the wild west of Web 3.
Exactly.
So let's bring all these threads together for you, the listener. Because whether you're playing a Final Fantasy game on an Xbox, or you're investing in these bizarre Solana microeconomies, or you're just appreciating that your new Joy-Cons won't drift anymore, the takeaway is the same. The old walls are gone.
They really are.
Adaptability for studios, for tech giants, and for you as a consumer is the absolute new currency.
And if we want to build on that, consider this hypothetical.
Oh boy, lay it on me.
If a decentralized platform like Pump.Fund's Joe Market can instantly crowdfund and pay humans to do real-world physical actions, and we know that modern AI is increasingly writing its own code.
Oh, I see where this is going.
How long until an autonomous AI creates its own crypto token, funds itself, and starts posting bounties for humans to literally build its physical servers in the real world?
Okay, that is terrifying. An AI paying humans to build its own physical body.
The infrastructure is right there.
Wow. That is exactly the kind of mind-bending thought to leave you with. Thank you so much for joining us as we explored all these crumbling boundaries today.
Oh.
Keep questioning the walls around you and stay insanely curious until our next deep dive. Take care, everyone.